Herzlich willkommen.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the annual press conference 2015. We're delighted to see you. Thank you for following our invitation. Let me make some housekeeping remarks before we start. Can you please switch off your mobile phones or mute them? And please do not take any photographs with a flash during the conference. The translation into English will be on channel one, and of course, we're also streaming the press conference onto the internet. You've received the Q4 documents and the fiscal year 2015 documents this morning, and you can also find the material on our website. Our CEO, Mr. Käser, will now give you an overview of the last fiscal year and an outlook onto the next one. And then Mr. Käser and Dr. Thomas, our CFO, will be available to take your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Heimbach. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, and I'd also like to welcome you very cordially here in Berlin in this historical Mosaic Hall. We are looking back at the first year with our new company setup, which 1.5 years ago we explained to you here, and quite a bit has happened over the past 12 months with regard to geopolitical, global economic, and technological changes, and naturally also at Siemens itself. The G7 agreed to achieve a decarbonization of the global economy in the course of this century, and I'd like to highlight with far-reaching consequences for the allocation of resources for innovations, value chains, and ultimately also for the situation of entire industries. Just think of the automotive industry. The inflow of refugees, I believe, is presenting Europe with a major task, and at the same time, it is proving to be a stress test for Germany and the entire European Union. And I mean this in every respect, politically, for society, and also for industry. These movements will have consequences for Germany. The country is changing, and it is up to us, companies, and the business community to help positively manage and shape this migration. China's new normal is a reality that we have to adjust to. Double-digit growth rates are a thing of the past. The country is facing major, and I really believe major, structural changes and also social challenges that come with these reforms, and this will have effects on business with China and also on imports into this country. The opening of Iran's market is imminent, provided that the agreement reached between the P5 plus one, as they're so aptly called, and Iran is quickly implemented. This development will offer opportunities in numerous businesses, and I'm quite sure of this. There will also be intense competition. The decline in the price of oil has been frequently discussed also with regard to our company, and it is affecting the entire global economy in manifold ways and also in a positive way, and thus it also has an impact on the investment behavior of oil and gas companies and entire national economies around the globe. Volatile currencies, raw material prices, and above all, ongoing geopolitical tensions are causing uncertainties in business that is self-evident. And along these notable geopolitical changes, we are also seeing the impact of digitization. The digital transformation is extending into virtually every, really every area of our lives, and thus our business fields and those of our customers and suppliers around the world. The Internet of Things, or as we call it internally, the Web of Systems, will, similarly to the Internet for end consumers, shorten value chains and thereby profoundly change entire business models along with the competitive landscape. Customers and supplier relations will be transformed, former competitors will disappear, and new providers will enter the market. We are living in times of political, economic, and technological changes that are faster and more profound than anything we've experienced since the Second World War. The question now is, where does Siemens stand in these turbulent times? And ladies and gentlemen, I think it is not surprising at all when I tell you that Siemens has gone through an eventful, exciting year, but we utilize the year to focus our business and to position Siemens along the value chains of electrification, automation, and specifically digitization. We delivered what we promised and are well positioned to deliver on our plans for the year ahead. And I think the key figures of the past year show this. Our orders from continuing operations grew, mostly due to currency translation and portfolio effects, by 6% to 82.3 billion, while the digital factory, mobility, and particularly energy management divisions achieved substantial increases. Order levels in our power generation business and process industries and drives were lower year over year. Also, with regard to expectations, the order backlog in the industrial business on September 30th, 2015, totaled 110 billion euros. Roughly half of this is accounted for by fossil and renewable power generation. That is the power and gas and wind power and renewables division. And this, we believe, is a solid basis for the coming years. Revenue also increased 6%, favored by currency translation and portfolio effects, to 75.6 billion. And again, we are seeing energy management, digital factory, and healthcare that are showing gratifying growth. Book to bill, the ratio between orders and revenue, was at a satisfying 1.09. Our industrial business, despite substantial realignment charges of 566 million euros in industrial business, increased its profit to 7.8 billion and delivered a margin of 10.1%. All divisions, and I'm stressing all divisions, are profitable, and 6 out of 8 divisions were able to increase their profit year over year. While wind power and energy management considerably improved their profitability from low levels in the previous year, digital factory, mobility, and healthcare are Champions League players with their impressive profitability, and we'd like to keep it like that. And even at power and gas, which could be found in the headlines quite a lot for different reasons, we can say that operations, excluding severance charges, lie within the set margin range. Despite our difficult business environment, our net income climbed by 34% to 7.4 billion euros. All in basic earnings per share grew 39% to 8.84 euros. This does not have a great operative impact because we know that 3 billion related to the divestments of our hearing aid business and our stake in BSH, which resulted in a one-time improvement of 3.66 euros in earnings per share, also figure in here. We hired a total of nearly 33,000 employees in fiscal 2015, including 4,500 in Germany, which I would like to specifically highlight, influenced by the acquisitions of Dresser-Rand and Rolls-Royce. But our workforce based on continuing operations grew by nearly 10,000 employees to 348,000. Now, if we summarize the entire fiscal year 2015, I believe there is one important headline for us, and I hope that you agree. We delivered on all, and I'd like to stress all, the key targets we had set for fiscal 2015. We met all points of the original outlook for the year that we announced in November, and we are slightly proud of our employees that have achieved this, because this fact distinguishes us in part considerably from competitors. We are right on track in reaching our savings target from reduced overhead costs of 1 billion by fiscal 2016 and move slightly ahead of schedule in the fourth quarter. For the so-called underperforming businesses, i.e. those units which achieved no or only very low profits for the company, we agreed upon binding restructuring and business plans in February 2015 and are now consistently implementing them. We structurally and concretely improved the quality of our project management and substantially reduced project-related net charges to around 400 million euros. Of this, only roughly 200 million euros come from our operating business. And these 200 million euros, I'd like to remind you of that, can be compared to the 1.2 billion euros in fiscal 2015 and an average around 700 million euros in recent years. Our new organization's focus on market and customer proximity is proving effective, and this is particularly important to us because it is showing this particularly in a very sensitive, important area, namely customer satisfaction. We always said that the new organization has to bring us closer to the customer, closer to the business, and by that I mean less burden because or less charges because business is understood better. It means better customer satisfaction at the end of the day, and within the course of just 1 year, i.e. 12 months, customer satisfaction increased by a full 5 percentage point. We're questioning more than 20,000 customers and develop representative results for our behavior and the further development of customer relations. The commitment of our employees is, despite the far-reaching changes in the company, more intact today than in a long time around the world. A total of 77%, more than 260,000 of our colleagues participated in our employee survey in the past fiscal year. 92% of those 260,000 told us that they are fully engaged for the company and ready to do even more. Even though the overall findings were somewhat lower compared to the employee survey taken in 2012, and we can't be satisfied with all aspects, we still lie substantially higher than the average for comparable companies, that much on the alleged secrecy. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you certainly will ask why one conducts such a survey in the midst of the company's biggest reorganization in 25 years. At least that's the question that I was asked. Such a decision naturally takes courage, honesty, and the firm will to involve employees in this far-reaching change process. But we are serious about further developing our company culture, and we are serious about creating a climate of openness, team spirit, and personal responsibility. In short, an ownership culture. And here we have also made great progress. The participation of employees in our share program and other relevant initiatives is outstanding. The establishment of what we call ownership culture is in full swing across the company and everywhere in the Siemens world. Now, you will maybe think that this really sounds like a success story. Not quite yet. We're very well aware of this, but we're making it one. After all, we have so far reached right on schedule every, and I'd like to highlight every milestone that we defined in Vision 2020. Still, much remains to be done. A long and strenuous path lies ahead of us before we have fulfilled all the goals set in Vision 2020. Above all, we must reverse the trend of declining volumes seen in the past years and increase them again. This turnaround is one of the key tasks for us in fiscal 2016, although the global economy is slowing down, and that is certainly no help here, and we must also further boost our innovative strength. But the fact that some of our competitors are copying elements of our Vision 2020 and are also giving their financial business an industrial focus now confirms our conviction that we have taken the right strategic course. We look to the future with confidence and a clear focus because we've already reached some important key milestones on our course. And this is also the result of hard, sometimes very hard work in structural upheavals. It is all about the orientation to global and rapidly changing markets, to increasingly fierce international competition. And it's also about the willingness and the ability to change and to proactively adapt to the new situations. And you have probably also noticed that a few weeks ago we were able to sell Unify to Atos, the former Siemens Enterprise telecommunications business. Shows how important it is to have this willingness and ability to change and proactively adapt, and that this is of utmost importance. But, ladies and gentlemen, we also know that we cannot always satisfy everybody. We always focus our considerations on Siemens. We give priority to Siemens as a whole. That is our priority, and this is important for the customers. But you are you remember that I already said that in my inaugural speech 2 years ago. And that's the maxim that we also follow for the current fiscal year. We have great plans for fiscal 2016, despite the overall economic environment that is expected to further soften and a geopolitical environment that will be marketed or marked by tensions. And particularly under these conditions, our goals for 2016, as we believe, are very ambitious. First, our business will grow again, and regarding orders, grow strongly. For our industrial business, we expect a profit margin of 10 to 11%. We assume that this margin will expand with growth for their operations, and this is important for operations. All businesses will lie at or within their target margin ranges. Thirdly, we furthermore expect basic earnings per share to be in the range of 5.9 to 6.2 euros. So the earnings per share would thus increase at least 14% on a comparable basis. This range, ladies and gentlemen, you have to compare this range, ladies and gentlemen, to the 5.18 we achieved in fiscal 2015, excluding the 3.66 euros per share in gains from the divestments of the hearing aid business and our stake in BSH. Fourth, part of these earnings will be invested in innovation for the development of markets and customers and for the improvement of productivity. To this end, we intend to invest around 1 billion euros more in operative research and development, sales, property, plant and equipment, and intangible assets, more than in fiscal 2015. And you might remember that in 2015, we have already seen great efforts as far as investment in these areas were concerned. Ladies and gentlemen, fiscal 2015 was, as we think, a dynamic year marked by substantial structural changes. I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this was the first year of operation in a new organizational structure. Management and all our colleagues worked hard and achieved good, in part, very good results. Just think of the turnaround of wind energy management, the maintenance of excellent world championship level margins in health technology and digital markets. Our employees will receive profit sharing benefits totaling nearly 2.2 billion euros in cash and shares, plus 200 million euros that we agreed to contribute to the Siemens profit sharing pool. We want that everybody, all stakeholders, if you wish, can benefit in this success. The new profit sharing pool was started a year ago, and our employees can directly participate in the company's profits following especially successful business years. one part of the generated profit if they lie above expectations and if they also stand out with regard to the economic performance can be paid into the profit sharing pool. When the total volume of this pool reaches 400 million, this sum will be distributed to the employees outside of management. This was important to us. It will be paid out to the employees worldwide outside of management, where possible in the form of Siemens shares. And with 200 million euros contribution in the first year, we believe that we have made a very good and impressive start here. In addition to this, the dividend for the shareholders, including 144,000 active Siemens employees, will be increased from 3.30 to 3.50 euros. The execution of our 4 billion euro share buyback program has made Siemens attractive to shareholders. We will set up a new share buyback program for up to 3 billion euros over a time frame of up to 3 years. This is also something that shows the consistency of the direction that we are taking, as we repeatedly said, and it is also an investment based on the situation that we are seeing when it comes to bond in exchange with bonds, with convertibles and share exchange possibilities. As I previously explained, we will continue to invest heavily in research and development and in sales and in property, plant and equipment, particularly because this is where our productivity is generated, and that is why in 2016 around 17 billion euros will be earmarked to this purpose in fiscal 2016, an increase of 7% over the prior year. Ladies and gentlemen, with the scheduled execution of our goals for fiscal 2015, the target structure for 2016, and the participation of important stakeholders in the company's success, we are implementing the core elements of the Vision 2020 with prudence, consistency, and, as we believe, transparency. In doing so, we have our eyes firmly, and I'd like to highlight this, firmly focused on the long-term goals of our company, our customers, our employees, and our shareholders. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you very much, Mr. Kayser. And with this, we're moving to the question and answer session. Please raise your hand to show that you'd like to take the floor, and then wait until you're given a microphone. Mr. Thomas and Mr. Kayser are available for questions. And let's start with Mr. Flemich. Please pass the microphone to the third person in the first row, and then we'll continue down the list.
Good morning. I have three questions. The first two on the forecast and the third one on the project impact. Mr. Kayser, you diagnosed that the environment is difficult, but you're going for moderate growth. Where will that be generated in terms of the divisions, and where do you hope the largest effects will be achieved? And the second question on the guidance of your results. You imply that in the current business year the cost cuttings will bear fruit. How about 2017? Will the group have to economize in an environment which is low growth more than previously to keep the margin for 2017? And the third question about the project impacts, they have been reduced almost to the previous average value. Is this a one-off effect, or do you really see a structural change which will take effect and be the same next year? So these are my questions. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Flemich. Where does the growth come from? First of all, it is attributable to investments which we carried out in 2014. We believe that we will see a broad-based growth. We are already seeing this from our order backlog. These are typically power and gas, but also wind, where we have orders with dates on them, where we have a certain list of orders that exist already. And it's also mobility, where we have a very comfortable order backlog situation, and they are contributing more than average to that growth. We also believe that healthcare technology, with its innovations, will contribute to that growth on a comparable basis. This also goes for others. I think the main growth driver will be mobility and also the environment of renewable energy. Maybe a few words about the cost. Cutting cost, well, of course, you can try to improve your results by making products more innovative. So you increase the benefit to the customer and increase the price quality. And this is also going to be our mantra for 2017. So the quality of our revenue or our earnings will not be increased by cutting cost and communicating to that effect for 2017. But our clear target is that we want to provide high quality of innovation and of customer benefit, but also productivity, which comes from innovation too. And it's also, it goes back to investments into new property, plant, and equipment, and also the project quality is important. Mr. Flemish, 2 years ago, we had announced that this is something we are focusing on very intensely. So please rest assured that we would never accept any solutions which will just provide short-term benefits. We're looking ahead, and our project impacts are going to be optimized further. We're not naive. We don't expect that there will never be project-related charges again, but we assume or we plan such that when before we take orders into our books, we check the resources available in our company, and we are analyzing all associated risks. We have a technical risk assessment, which I mentioned, which is especially important when we're entering new territory technologically, not just when we use resources in certain areas, but also cross-cutting projects. We have so-called silverbacks, people who are experts and who can be involved when we have complex questions which are cross-cutting. Also, local expertise in countries where we haven't done so many projects historically. And we're also using what Mr. Käser said a little while ago. The ownership culture also produces an effect where people will raise their voices proactively and will point out to us if willy-nilly we should well, we're running risks and we should discuss those risks. So we are learning all the time. And I don't want to conceal from you that our rules have been made very strict, how much value creation is necessary for Siemens so that we will book a project in our books. Because in the past, our portfolios have sometimes involved parties which caused a situation where we got into difficulties. Now, we will be very consistent in pursuing our new strategy, and we're very strict with the projects we take on board. Any other questions about this? And then Mr. Höbner, please. Mr. Thomas, so how is this, you're going for the half of the 700 million, or will this be lower after you've optimized the processes? Answer, you know, when we gave the 700 million as an annual average, and when we said this was, of course, breathtaking. The fact that we can say 2 years later that half of what we envisaged back then has been achieved and that we see further optimization potential, this is something we would like to report on after we've delivered, rather than naming even more ambitious goals before we've taken the next step. I have three questions too. First of all, you want to outgrow your competitors in the current fiscal year, faster and more. And the second question, when will you have the turnaround at Power and Gas? And the third one, at the weekend, there was a kind of wake-up call with breaking resistance? Do you feel that there is growing resistance right now, or do you feel that the organization is leaning back a bit, or why did you say that? Why did you make that statement? Thank you very much, Mr. Heppner. Now, whether we want to outgrow our competitors in 2016, this is something for which there may be indications, and when we look at the forecasts of competitors for 2016, of course, this will take a while because we're one quarter earlier than the others with our figures. And as Mr. Thomas just said, we will see what happens. This happens not only for projects, but also for the relative performance. We will see when the figures are there. But of course, we have a vision, we have a concept, and of course, the share of we want to catch up vis-à-vis our competitors. And when you compare the curves, at least you see that there is a clear turnaround and that gap is not widening. In fact, it's becoming smaller. Power and gas, as I said, the power and gas division in 2015, that division was in our target corridor regarding the margin. Power and gas is a long cycle business, so this means innovations take between 3 and 7 years. When a new gas turbine, a new generation of gas turbines is developed, then typically you wait for about 7 years. Sometimes you might even take a bit longer. So what I'm saying here is that the changes will not be fast. But again, we announced that power and gas is going to grow in terms of top line. And so when we look at the trend changes for 2016, I think we're on a good way. And Ms. Davis has, within a very short time indeed, achieved very much. You see these geological or archaeological bits of guesswork that people are digging up don't fit in with our corporate culture. They never did, and they are not something we really want to comment on. We have a high degree of engagement. We have many people who are extremely committed in our workforce, and I think it's very encouraging for the executive board that people have spaces to develop and unfold. They have leeway and responsibility. That's good. For the past fiscal year, do you have any competition figures? Do you have any internal figures there? Well, there are also external figures because all competitors report their figures. Of course, this year we're also benefiting from currency translation effects and from acquisitions, as do competitors or as did competitors in the past number of years. Now, in the fourth quarter, as you could see, with 23.7 billion, we had a pretty nice new orders figure, double-digit growth, and in real terms, 6% above the previous year. I don't recall any of our competitors' last quarter figures to be as high as that. Maybe I've missed one, but I think looking at that, you can sort of guess the dynamism that is involved here. Mr. Bauer and then Mr. Reipkar. Good morning, Mr. Käser. Three questions. One about the guidance. The top-line growth, can you specify that a bit more? You talked about moderate growth. Does this mean up to 5% growth? And what does strong growth in new orders mean? Is this high single-digit growth or maybe even more? And how do you see the Dresser development in the fourth quarter of the last business year? They were consolidated for the first time. How has that business evolved, especially the margin? How has that developed? And how do you, or what are your own forecasts for the petroleum price? We can expect, especially when you look at large groups like BP, they forecast that within the next 3 years, the oil price will not be in excess of $60 per barrel, and the International Energy Agency expects the price to be $80 only in several years' time and not for the near future. How are your own predictions? And how about China? How difficult will the business be in 2016 in that country? Thank you very much. Now, that's a whole range of important questions you've raised. So, what does moderate mean? You said 0 to 5 would be a bandwidth. I think that 0 is very conservative indeed, but 5 is probably the upper range of that corridor, which we would classify as moderate growth. Strong growth in new orders, we believe that the growth of new orders will be clearly above the growth of our top line. It might become double digit, which is something that we would certainly be happy about. But I think the guidance in an environment where the capital goods and investment goods industry is basing their guidance on a 0% growth scenario, I think our first feedback of shareholders has also clearly revealed that. And it was important for us, of course, to get that feedback. I think they are confirming that our top line guidance is very ambitious. Now, the Dresser-Rand development, we are pleased with what we see in terms of the performance of that company, how they are addressing their challenges, and that's certainly an improvement. Also, regarding the way they tackle their challenges and the figures, how they have evolved, if it still were Dresser, maybe, which is hypothetical, but maybe Mr. Thomas can say a bit more about that. We do not make predictions for the petroleum price because this is nothing we can influence. But what we can influence, and this is what we're focusing on, is how we can help our customers to cut costs. This is something that has to do with decentralized supply of energy. It has to do with automation processes being implemented in the oil and gas industry, and on a scale from 1 to 10, it is maybe at 2 at the most, and compared with the automotive industry, where we would have a value of 7 or 8 in terms of automation. So from that, you see the risk potentials for cost-cutting in petroleum, in the petroleum industry. And remember that oil and gas is also gas, and the gas price is very stable. We have very high demand in liquefaction plants for gas and also for transportation of gas to customers. This is another area, and with the acquisition of Dresser-Rand and Rolls-Royce, we gained access to that market. So in this field, we are seeing very attractive potential indeed, and also growth potential. And now regarding petroleum, we are concentrating, as I said, on cutting costs and helping our customers cut costs and automate. China 2016. This is certainly a central question and has to do with how much of our guidance we're going to achieve. Now, the industrial production, which is the relevant variable we're looking at, the industrial production during the second half year 2016 is going to pick up again. And you may have heard or read that the industry output in the past months and quarters in China was below the figures of the financial crisis 2009. So this is an alarming development, of course, but the forecasts are predicting the figures picking up, but we will first see a rather weak development there. Maybe I can help you with the figures about Dresser. You have received this press kit, haven't you? And when you look at the annex on page 21, which is where we report our Dresser business, in combination with the previous compressor business for the fourth quarter, and this is about 900 million top line. Interestingly, 40% service share is included in that figure, which means a total profit margin in that business unit is 6.5%. The historic Dräser standalone share, which is not really important to us because we're looking ahead rather than back, and we're concentrating on achieving 200 million synergies in the business by 2019. We are in fact optimistic that we might even push this a bit further. If you look at the historic volume share of Dräser, you need to take about two-thirds of that combined business, and that is attributable to Dräser, and the profitability is higher than the average, which applies to the overall business. You can also see in the figures here that in the beginning, there were important integration and transformation impacts. Also, we had some depreciation or amortization on intangible assets, not just in the fourth quarter, by the way. The PPA effects, as we call them technically, are 200 million per annum for the next years. The stronger business model has to earn this money, as does the interest paid for the financing of this acquisition, which is about the same order of magnitude. Thank you. I have three questions. First of all, I would like to know whether you are happy with top line growth of 5% in the long run. Now, if I understand correctly, you've completed the restructuring. Will 5% be enough for you in the medium term? Then I would like to know whether in the portfolio reduction, are there any major challenges or any major items on your agenda when you rebuild your portfolio, and if so, where? In that context, you mentioned this in passing, that if GE goes back to the roots, that is a kind of confirmation. How about you? Now, medical technology or healthcare technology is still an area where you might ask, is this really part of the activities, or should this be part of the group? You mentioned China. What are the greatest risks that could prevent you from achieving your guidance 2016?
Thank you. Well, the question whether 5% is enough, if after years of declines, we're going back to growth, I think, well, for the time being, 5% is certainly not bad. If you know a little bit about the industry, the investment goods, the capital goods industry is not an industry where growth falls like manna from heaven. It's more a service to consumers type business, which is running well. You see, you know, when you look at industrial companies, when you look at their share prices, and how they do vis-à-vis the indices, this is a very clear indication of the situation of that industry. It's always important to compare on an industry benchmark basis. Again, as I said, I think 5% is not bad at all to begin with. You mentioned challenges. There are always challenges because there is a more dynamic competition situation. The environment is changing all the time. You could say that we're looking at a perpetual change. We have done a lot in the past 2 years. We've focused the company strategically. Every knows what are the focuses of our company. When that environment changes, the market or technologically things change and our customers' expectations change, we try to anticipate that, not just by providing innovations on the market, but also regarding the structuring of our portfolio. I don't know about that remark back to the roots I don't know whether I'd really said that. Probably not. We don't really have to go back to the roots because we haven't really left our roots. We have always been a symbol of innovation, technology, and reliability. This is not something that has always worked out 100%. Remember the project-related impacts, but this is different now. This 5 percentage points increase within 1 year, this is good news, so we are feeling quite comfortable with our roots. The important thing is to keep in mind what the reality is and to look ahead, look into the future, and to remember what has made us successful. There will be changes, and we are embracing that change by giving our people leeway, by promoting a competition of ideas, by giving people more freedom of decision. This is an important prerequisite for that change we need. And there are always these strategic debates, and many books are written about them. I think more books are being written about digitalization than change management by now. But, you know, it's not true that the big ones will gobble up the small ones, and it will not be the fast ones that will eat the slow ones. The winners will be those who can adapt to a changing environment. This is something that people have to realize, because the pace of change is going to increase rather than decrease, and this is something we are seeing also in the context of digitalization. China. I think despite all complaints we hear about the new normal in China is a 7% growth of the GDP. And if I calculate correctly, this is 3 to 4 times as much as the European Union. So we see from that that the opportunities in China continue to be great. We just have to expect that things will settle down a bit, but on a high level. And remember health technology, healthcare, which is still very underdeveloped there. And also the Chinese government has adopted a major reform agenda where you go from low end, that is simple assembly jobs, to high quality production for the automotive industry, for the aerospace industry. These were parts of the 5-year plan that were explicitly explained and declared. And for this, you need automation. And you need error rates which are in the parts per million range, 1 to 3 errors per 100,000 or 20 per 1 million. And this is something you can never achieve with manual assembly, but it is achievable with highly automated production. And when you automate your production, then you need Siemens. Or at least it's difficult to overlook Siemens. You can always make a different choice, but these are big opportunities that we are deriving from that change in China. And remember the highly efficient transmission of power over large distances. This is a very important part of the infrastructure upgrading of China from the urban into suburban environments. And this is certainly an area where we're excellently prepared and where we can have good market share. Now, the fact that you can also generate power with wind in China, too, is one of our clear targets. We are already operating here in the onshore range, and we're offering products there already. So where's the risk? The risk is the forecast, and of course, in China, in the second half of 2016, the short cycle business is probably going to pick up, and this is what our forecasts are based on. If that does not happen, then this will impair our margin quality. Remember, the digital factory, I've stressed this often enough, I suppose. This is not just a highly competitive and innovative division, but also one with a high margin. This is usually correlated. Fortunately, it is. And if here we see any impacts, then for each euro less In terms of top line, we have 60 cents less bottom line. The good thing that the opposite is also true. So if you grow by 100, we get 60 more in our tills. So these are the uncertainties of short cyclical business. And we have order times of 4 to 8 weeks. So the accuracy of forecast in power and wind, where I could give you a clear percentage how we're going to grow in 2016, but with mobility, the percentage, even under Mr. Bauert's strong regime, we are able to predict very well. But when we have order processing times of 4 to 8 weeks, it's very difficult to make predictions which reach far into the next year. So then, of course, we have a faster pace. Ms. Meyer and then Mr. Kamp.
Good morning. I have a question on Dresser Rand again. Can you tell us what the contribution to earnings in the fourth quarter were after integration costs? Then the free metals, you have a devaluation of 138 million that you booked. The closing happened in January of 2015, so this happened very quickly. What is going on there? And what is the reason for this? Did you have to put in additional capital, or will this happen? I'm talking about either equity or third-party equity. And then on the employee survey, you said that you proceeded in a very open and transparent way. As far as I know, there was one question which more or less was along the line, does the employee think about leaving the company? Can you tell us what the result or the answer to that question was with regard to both the employees in Germany and the group at a global level? Now, let me start, and I'd like to suggest to look at page 21 with regard to Dresser Rand. On the left-hand side, you see the integration cost of 19 million, and those integration costs will continue to go into the next fiscal year. If you add it up one quarter to four quarters, you will see the size of the integration costs. And I also said that the larger share of the profit margin all in, 6.5%, will come from Dresser Rand. The question regarding the pre-metals and the 138 million are the result of an impairment test where it is tested whether the value of an asset, the way we keep it in our balances, is similar to the actual value of the times, and that was no longer the case. So we looked at a present value, which correctly was 138 million, as you said. This does not have an impact on the capitalization structures within the company, and neither equity nor third-party capital went into this. And with regard to, you also need to take into consideration during the fourth quarter that in the previous year's quarter, we reported that we still had the BSH parts, a contribution of 61 million euros in the fourth quarter of the previous year. And metallurgical projects at that time that were not transferred to this new joint venture accounted for about 70 million special contributions. So in the previous year, we had 130 million from these two titles, and the 130 million from the metals impairment combined with the 80 million of restructuring can explain this amount that you asked for. And next question, I'm thinking, or I know a lot of things, but not everything, and I hope that you can forgive me for not remembering everything with regard to the employee survey, but you're referring to retention and whether there are employees who think about leaving the company. I think the findings were not extraordinary with regard to changes over the course of the time. We are seeing that there are slight changes, but very honestly, I don't know whether I should say I would wish for employees to think about leaving the company, because if they stay long enough and stay on, even though they think about leaving, is a good sign. But the fact that they are thinking about it is that they are looking for an alternative, and that they have an alternative, and that they also constitute a marketable value. The employees who are thinking about leaving are not the problem. Those who don't think about leaving are the actual problem. Mr. Kampf, followed by Mr. Stahl. Two questions on the regions. Mr. Kaiser, you spoke a lot about China. How do you see Russia and particularly South America, Brazil? Do you expect a permanent decline or a fast recovery? And a few more words on Iran. What do you think will be the development there? How could the roadmap look like there? Thank you very much, Mr. Kamp. Now, these are questions that have a very high political aspect as well. Brazil, not so much. The biggest part of the economic development there is made by a company that is very much self-involved at the moment. We are all familiar with the reasons for this. So you have to say that this country will remain considerably below its possibilities. The opportunities there would be a lot higher, and Brazil developed very nicely in the BRIC context for many years, but the economic corrections that need to be taken there have to be taken into consideration, and it might also be a downward development. Russia is also important with regard to the political tensions. There are political agreements there which we, and I always stress this when talking to the Russian authorities, that we adhere to and subscribe to, and that does have an impact on revenue, and had an impact on revenue quite naturally, and we hope that the political environment will improve there. The country needs industrialization in order to not always go up and down with the natural resources cycle. Currently it's going down. But what's interesting is that the export of gas from Russia to Germany has increased considerably compared to 2014. But as I already said, there would be a lot of opportunities if we saw clear improvements in the geopolitical environment. And until then, it's a matter for policymakers and not for us. We would have enough opportunities to make our contribution there. And the same applies to Iran. There were the negotiations, and I mentioned this in my speech, and a basic agreement was reached, and we are now waiting for the way this agreement is worded, this declaration of intent is put into words, and then we can make our contribution. But until then, we have to cautiously and carefully monitor it, and if it happens, it will not hit us out of left field. Mr. Stahl? Mr. Kaiser, you said the inflow of refugees is a stress test for Germany, and that it is now up to the companies to live up to their responsibility. What is Siemens doing to, for example, integrate Syrians, refugees, and to quote the Chancellor, will we be able to do this? And then two more questions on Osram. First, a $3 billion investment program was announced. Siemens continues to hold shares in Osram. What do you think about this $3 billion program? And what do you think about the Osram stock exchange crash yesterday? They went down almost 30%. And from an Augsburg point of view, I read that there were intense discussions with KUKA, the head of KUKA, Mr. Till Reuter. Do you plan on intensifying your cooperation with KUKA, Mr. Kaiser? Thank you. Now, on the issue of refugees, I can tell you what we are doing, and I can also tell you what we are not doing. We don't give advice that we are not asked for. We don't do that, and we also don't join into criticism that is easily made, but I believe is very often quite premature. Since the Second World War, our country has benefited from export around the world in an unprecedented way, all of us here in this room and everywhere would not be as well off if Germany were not the world champion in export as it is. Globalization was a congenial invention, particularly for Germany and also for affluence in this country. And now the situation is slightly changing. The pendulum is swinging in the other direction, and it is difficult. And globalization is swinging in the other direction and redefining this migration flow as a globalized problem now is something that we probably wouldn't have done. And we help, and we help where there will be the greatest impact. We provide housing, we provide buildings and property so that people have a roof over their heads, particularly now in the fall and in the winter time. And we also provide language courses so that people can not only be understood, but also communicate themselves. That's what we're doing from a humanitarian angle, and that's what we're concentrating on. And in order to, whether this will help to do away with the lack of skilled labor is something that we will answer later when the first emergency measures are met. As far as Osram is concerned, this is very similar to the previous question, whether we believe that our guidance is ambitious or not. That's what the shareholders will determine when determining the share price. And yesterday they determined on what they think about what was said and in a very clear way. And I cannot add anything to that. We are shareholders as well. And those who have not yet sold their shares are not in a very happy place today. And I hope that Siemens shareholders are happier. I didn't look at the share price, but I'm being told that it's going up. So that's quite positive, because this is always the best feedback. Then you don't have to do guesswork, but you can rely on the collective feedback. I don't know whether you familiar with the book The Second Machine Age. It sells very well at the moment because everybody wants to know what the future brings and everybody wants to be involved. And it says that the crowd is a lot more important than the facts are. I am not entirely convinced of that yet, but maybe crowd and facts can somehow be aligned with each other. And I think that's something that also applies in the on the capital markets. The crowd said we don't like it, or maybe the crowd said we think it's good, but we don't want to be a part of it because it's changing the company's risk profile. And maybe others will come up and say this is where we want to become involved, and semiconductors are volatile in the first place, so it's a different shareholders profile. So it's an issue for that company's management and their supervising bodies, and the shareholders will act by either buying or selling shares. And we had the same number of shareholders who thought that this is a good investment now, shares at that price, because when a lot of people sell, there are also a lot of people who buy. So there might be some people who think that this is not such a bad situation, but not at the price of 52 euros. And KUKA is both a client and supplier to us. You know that in robotics, and not everybody shares that opinion, but I always say robotics is important. We make the brain of robotics available, the motion control, the control of the mechanical side. So we are closely involved with all robotic manufacturers, because these processes need close cooperation, and coordination and integration is desperately needed. So we also have plants where we use robots. So that's why KUKA is also a supplier to us. So we do have a very intact relationship based on customer and supplier relations. Mr. Heck, Mr. Webmann, Mr. Mulke, and Ms. Protan. And I don't know whether I've overlooked anybody. If so, please show your hands. And we're now moving on with Mr. Webb.
Thank you.
I've got two things I want to ask. Without the effect of the business you've sold, The figure went down to 5.18, and you're expecting maximum growth of 5% in top line and a stable operating margin. So the 14% EPS growth, how will you achieve that? Are there any cost-cutting measures below industry level, or can you take shares out of the country? And of course, you have to book the 167 million of Unify, and we have heard very little investment plans on decarbonization. If the interpreter heard correctly, GE are investing in that. Or when you collect data, will you have an SAP solution, or will you have a bolt-on solution for that? Digitalization it was. Let me make some general remarks about relative versus absolute. When you grow and when you take percentages, Mr. Bauer talked about between 0 and 5, so let's take 3. 3% to 76 billion, so 3 times 75 would be a lot of money. 2 billion more revenue, and of course, the result from that is an increase in profit. Even if the margin stays the same, there's between 10.0 and 11.0, there's a certain bandwidth between those values. And we didn't say that we would be at the lower end. But when you generate growth, then your profit will grow when the margin is the same. And divided by the same number of shares, the EPS will also grow. So you could calculate like that. However, we want to grow even more in EPS. And this is now the reason why we are carefully and prudently initiating cost-cutting measures, for example, support functions, where we've made a lot of progress also under Mr. Thomas's guidance, but also by boosting innovation. We want to be able to offer products which will be well accepted on the market. Now, this is not without risk. This is something I mentioned in the context of short cycle businesses, where we are watching the volatility closely. Regarding the digitalization you mentioned, first of all, I have to say that digitalization is something we've done for a long time. We have a lot of experience, and we've invested for a long time into that area. There may be others whom this does not apply. We even have a division that is called the Digital Factory since the 1st of October 2014, and there's a reason for that, because we had elements in our company which contribute very much to what we call Industry 4.0 in Germany. This is motion control, this is the brain of robotics, and the software, the PLM software, which connects the virtual world with the real world. The simulation and development is linked to real production equipment, and from that we can also derive simulation results. With these automation and digitalization business, we're also generating 15 billion turnover or revenue, and we believe that in the medium term this will increase by at least 9% per year. So digitalization, something people talk about so much, this is something that has happened at Siemens for a long time. We will continue to enhance that and make it larger and a large part of the R&D and power in, and also energy management, that is transmission of energy, digital factory and healthcare. A lot of investment goes into the software. We have more than 14,000 software engineers. We've had them for some time in our company. So in that respect, we have a lot of competencies here, and we are increasing our business here, and also the R&D increases are going into just that part, into that part of the business. In addition to that, we have been looking at the risk, and we just talked about the project charges and the project handling quality. We have improved that. We will continue to improve it. Mr. Käser said in his initial statement that we have gone to great length. For those business who have not yet achieved our margin level to reach break even, and by 2017 we want to be at about 6% in terms of earnings. Now we will take the first step next year. And something I also want to mention, the fact that we are working on our productivity increase potential in a sustainable way. In our Vision 2020, when we presented that Vision 2020, we said that every year we will look at the cost base and we want to increase 3 to 5% productivity to counteract the effect of price increases and also HR cost increases. In addition to that, we have this project of 1 billion over 2 years. We are doing quite well there, and you may have seen that in 2016, a major part is going to be achieved. And please don't underestimate the fact that we are very serious about the question, that we are analyzing where we invest. That additional billion of investments into R&D, into our field force or into our sales structure and also our manufacturing footprint. These are all measures which are not arbitrary but extremely focused. They are being carried out to make the most of our capital, to have very high capital efficiency, and that is paying off now. Mr. Heckmann, and next. I have three questions. The first one, Mr. Käser, is that you said that last year you achieved all your targets and you delivered on your guidance. Now, the margin was always discussed very much. You're now at 10.1% in the industrial business. My question is, how much of a currency effect is in that 10.1%? And you mentioned briefly that in 2016, this effect might become even stronger, I suppose, because in 2015 you've been doing a bit of hedging. So how much currency translation effect is in that? The second question relates to Egypt. This is an order which you negotiated. When do you expect that deal to be closed? And how high is the actual Siemens part of that order? There are different figures that people are giving or guessing. And maybe to go off on a bit of a tangent, you said that in 2015 you want to have a book-to-bill of more than one. This Egypt order, will that contribute considerably to achieving that goal? And the third question, your profit targets for 2016, you're giving us 10 to 11% here. And there were discussions before how you will define your targets for 2016. Will you also define bandwidths of profits or of earnings for the different areas, for example, healthcare or power and gas? Will you give individual figures for that, or will you change anything about those targets? Maybe I can start with the first part of your question. You asked about the effects of currencies. I always gave you full transparency, and we also announced that during the second half of 2015, we were expecting a positive effect from currency translation. 40 basis points, that is 0.4% compared with the previous year, has been an advantage provided by currency translation effects. We also said in the first 6 months that due to our very prudent and conservative way of handling hedging operations, we would have a certain period for which those operations will take effect. And this is also true for the second half of the year. We will also have a slightly beneficial effect from foreign exchange effects early next year. If you look at the dollar as an example for the overall system of foreign exchange, you can see that during the first quarter of 2016, we would see a big difference. Or a year ago, the dollar was at 125. Now it's less than 110 last quarter this year compared with last quarter last year. And if there are no major changes, then we'll have a systematic difference in the level, but that will not play any role. That will not have an effect on our top line, also not on our new orders. We will not have any major changes as we expected in 2015. And in the bottom line, we'll have a small after effect in 2016 as a result of the effect of the hedging operations, which run for a certain period of time. In 2015, the currency effect year on year was 40 basis points in the overall year. And for 2016, you can expect a small after effect, which I did not quantify, but which will truly be small for the whole year. Now, before we read in the headlines tomorrow, Siemens achieves its targets only as a result of currency effects, can I give you another figure? 600 million of restructuring, also in the industrial business. This is something we managed to tackle. Now, if you calculate, then I think it should be the effect should be twice as high as the 40 basis points, just to give you the proportion so that you don't get a distorted picture. Again, on the Egypt order, part of it had an effect during the fourth quarter. Several hundreds of millions were there already, and more will come next year. So in that respect, this big order is having an effect on our growth in 2016. But it will not be the only factor there. The split between the, say, construction measures, the buildings in which the turbines and the equipment will be installed and how much is in our books is not yet fully clear. This will depend, among other things, on our consortium partners. We tend to prefer to have as little of third-party operations or businesses on our books. This has to do with risks as well. So we expect that the major share of the business will actually be our own business. And during the fourth quarter, 2015, we have already seen an effect of this. Now, the closing of that deal you asked about, very soon, the financial closing, we have already negotiated, but the financing and the financial part now, we expect that deal to be fully closed very soon. And the 10 to 11%, we are investing 1 more billion, aren't we? And of course, there will be an effect on the result, but we also want to invest into R&D and ensure sustainable growth, not just 2016, but also 17 and 18 and beyond. And I think I said, was it the 7th of May in 2014 when we talked about the strategy and presented it, that it will take time until that growth corridor, that growth trend has been reversed, which was negative for a while, and that we would have to take structural measures. You may remember that I said that 2014 was the year of strategic alignment, of finding a clear direction. Where do we want to go? How do we allocate resources? How do we organize our company? And how do we operate on the market? We wanted to get closer to the business to understand early on what the projects will look like and not just discuss on the audit committee how high the investment is, because that is too late. And the financial department has always been very good at posting the impacts in a clear way. But of course, we want to see early on what a project is like and what it means for us. And we've seen many examples that show us that it's not lack of competence of our engineers handling the orders, but rather it was a motivation to accept orders which maybe shouldn't have been accepted, certainly not at the terms. So there a lot has changed, a lot has happened, and this is important. So we had this new organization on October the 1st, and then logically the next step, 2015, which for us was the year of operational consolidation. This had to do with the business plans being implemented for businesses which are not generating any profit, 15 billion euro. Now, this was a very important task we had to tackle. And then if you want to be closer to the customers, if you want to be closer to the business, you need to do some delayering. You have to make the paths of communication shorter. And from that, we generated what became known as 1x16, or which became one of our standard terms used in our company. Now, this is something that is on the way. It's running already. And we've seen the first nice successes in Q4. There are some more things that we have changed, and we had to consolidate on the operational side. And 2016, we want to optimize. Things we started are going to be fine-tuned and optimized, because things that we thought were running well are not running that well. So we need to do some tuning. The dynamism of competition has changed. If you look at our competitors today, you sometimes get the impression that you have more shareholder activists that are doing things than the companies themselves. Now, this is something we do not see at Siemens, because in 2014, I believe, at least our shareholders see it that way, we really presented a good strategy, which of course has to be implemented. And for many people in the company, this is change that is happening fast, maybe too fast. But if we say we've achieved our guidance or our expectations, these are not the expectations of third parties, but it's based on what we promised. So it didn't always go as smoothly as we thought, but in the end we kept our word. We achieved the results we planned for, and this is important. And it's not always relevant in Formula One if you start from pole position, but who comes first, who comes out as the winner. Then Mr. Wotan, and sorry, something. I do apologize. We have this in the financial cockpit of the Vision 2020, and there the margin corridors, the margin bandwidths are there, and they have not changed even in more adverse times in economic terms, because the lower values of these bandwidths actually should reflect a situation where the business situation is less favorable. We should be there. And I said in my initial statement also that we have reason to believe that most divisions operationally will be in that corridor, in those corridors in 2016. And I think this is a target which is clearly better than where we're now.
Ms. Brotan, Mr. Zumak, and then one last question. Thank you. I also have three questions. Mr. Kaiser, I'm here. Over here. You are proud that compared to some of your competitors, you were able to achieve your guidance, and who are you referring to when you say competitors, and why are you performing better, because you're in a better position or because your guidance was more realistic? And then I have some questions directed at Mr. Thomas. The non-performing businesses that made up 20% of Siemens's revenue, how are they faring now? What share do they make up now? And then on severance costs, have all the restructuring measures been completed, or will there be more severance costs over the course of the year? Now let me start with the first question. We presented our guidance as the first in our industry. We're slightly ahead of the others, 3 months ahead. We were very precise and explained what the assumptions are that we base our goals on. And at the end of the day, we achieved the goals. There were a lot of vicissitudes, a lot of things that were less favorable, but also a lot of things that were helpful, like the currency fluctuations. But there was also a lot that we had to deal with, because you cannot really foresee the future, but you have to be able to adjust. And we succeeded in doing that. I'm not necessarily proud that we were able to achieve the guidance, but I am proud that everybody worked hard in the company to achieve particularly that. And as far as the competitors are concerned, if you want to, you can clearly see who they are. I don't want to speculate about this. We do our homework, the competitors do their homework, and I think everybody is well advised to do that and focus on that. Thank you very much. Regarding your question of the severance charges, let me start with this. In fiscal year 2015, we had 804 million booked for severance charges, and Mr. Kayser and myself repeatedly said that this is the large part of the restructuring program, as you frequently call it. In a company like ours, which is active in many areas around the world, we have to continuously develop our productivity potentials and have to react to the markets. It would be impossible to say that we can always anticipate this, but you can expect these 804 million to be the biggest chunk of this continuous restructuring, which is happening as part of the further development of the company as a whole and as an adjustment to market environments. The question regarding the underperforming businesses, I already said that this year we succeeded in breaking even. I'm referring to 2015, and the volume that we now have available for future improvement potential is somewhere around 14 billion. We had the compressor business that we combined with the Dresser-Rand activities, which is no longer part of that now. So we believe that we can quickly learn from each other, and by doing this, massively advance the profitability of this business. I already said that the fourth quarter has shown very promising beginnings, but that we have by no means reached the end of our improvement efforts. The 800 million restructuring are for the entire company, and 600 for the industrial business, and the remaining 200 were directed at the overhead. Mr. Zumak, I have a follow-up question on the restructuring program. How many jobs had, or how many jobs were lost over the past 1.5 years, and how many jobs will be cut? Well, we net had, from 2014 to 2015, 10,000 new jobs, and there are geographic redistributions that are mostly set by both customers and markets. And we very clearly showed that we recognize that the regional component is of relevance for regional interests, but the company as a whole in 2015 had to let go 10,000 people, and mostly because of the acquisition, but also organically. And this shows that when You speak about structural readjustments because markets changed both geographically or technologically, or also because of the behavior of the customers' demand behavior, that things need to be regulated. But sometimes the situation improves in other parts of the world. And Mr. Mulke, with the final question, third row on the left. Maybe you could be a little bit more precise with regard to Germany, and I'm very much interested in Frankenthal. What does the future hold for Frankenthal? As far as Frankenthal is concerned, we are in very intensive and, I believe, constructive negotiations with the company representatives, and I believe that we will find a right solution. Now, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. With this, we have gone through all of the questions. Thank you very much for your contributions, Mr. Kayser, Mr. Thomas. Thank you very much to you. The analyst call will begin at 11 a.m., and you can follow it from the media room. And we are now offering food and beverages to you here in the Mosaic Hall. I'd like to point out that on November 20th, we will have here in Berlin the Day of Participation, where Mr. Kayser is also involved. And on December 8th, we have our Innovation Day in Munich, and we would be happy if you could also participate in these two events. In addition to this, we will probably meet again on January 26th, 2016, to present the figures for the first quarter, and we'll do this in Olympiahalle in Munich. Enjoy the rest of the day. Goodbye.